possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. And there's the whistle. It's over. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that never give in.
He hits it. He hits it. Wow. It's over the bar.
This week's RTEGA podcast is not sorry for its outburst yesterday. It has not had too many pints. It's not learned its lesson, and it's not going to keep its mouth shut going forward. Hey, how are you doing? This is Mikey Stafford. This week I'm joined by Rory O'Neill of the League Sunday and Sunday Game fame, and by Jim McMahon of RTE Online fame. How are you doing, lads?
Hey, Mikey.
Hi, Mikey.
So, we're there again, lads. Back to Mayo. Back to Tim O'Leary. And Mayo GA have decided to cease all dialogue with their millionaire benefactor after his tweeting. Never drink and tweet, lads. Tweeting during their 9-point loss to Monaghan at the weekend. He tweeted, hashtag horn out. We are not very good. Hashtag truth hurts always. 2 hours after their defeat. He deleted the tweets, as we all do. Subsequently apologised, saying, sorry for my outburst yesterday. Had a few too many pints. Lesson learned. I'm going to keep my mouth shut going forward. But Mayo are not happy, and they have said they will not engage with stakeholders whose behaviours deviate from what has been mandated by our clubs. The Mayo GA executive can this evening confirm that we have ceased all dialogue with Mr. Tim O'Leary. This was coming, but do any of us think, Rory, it was going to come in such a hilariously entertaining fashion?
Well, do you remember when the Mayo story initially broke? Where
I don't know if I do. It's so long ago.
We were sat in this room back in whenever it was. Was it October or November? And the Mayo, the row about him wanting expenses and seeing receipts and all of that, right? This is probably a natural enough conclusion for what's been a fairly sorry episode from the very get-go. And it's kind of dumbfounding in it to a certain extent. I mean, when I saw the chatter kind of a surface initially on Sunday evening, before we were going on Sunday night live at 9:30, my instinct still is, just ignore this. I mean, this isn't even worth, you know, there's, and I think Mayo probably, for me, shouldn't have even given this the kudos of issuing a statement. I mean, it should have, like, I don't know, it's, you know, whoring out and then looking like, what are we at?
It does, you know, seem, Jim, slightly, it would be unfair to say it's kind of grandstanding on the part of Mayo GAA here to say that, you know, to come out with that statement saying that, you know, this behaviour has deviated what's mandated by our club. Clubs, grand, you have a mandate, you have a, obviously they have terms and conditions and how we're all supposed to behave with each other. But do you need to state that? This is a guy who has tried to wield some control via financial power
from afar, you know,
Bahamas,
from Bahamas. He's probably, I don't know, smoking on a Cuban cigar maybe today.
I think he was in Prague. I believe the tweets were geolocated to Prague.
Yeah.
So let's guess he was on a stag.
He probably
put it out
was on
there.
A stag somewhere. But I mean, I don't know. Does this kind of trail? It's very Mayo like. It's just something that I don't think it. I mean, it just wouldn't happen in Galway or Roscommon or some other or neighbouring counties. It just seems to be part of the whole Mayo
soap opera
that has been going on for the past couple of years.
To go back to the initial, when if a benefactor comes on board to become a sort of a silent partner, donor, whatever he may be, okay? If he's giving money to the county board for whatever reason, it comes back to, it's up to the county board to decide how they are going to disperse those funds. That should never change. The governance of the county board at the elite level, at the top level.
Unless it's given with conditions. Unless at the very get-go he says,
and then if
or
it
she
is,
says,
it,
these
it,
are my conditions.
If it is given then with conditions, if the county boards are desperate enough to take it, then they have to, I suppose, adhere to those conditions. But what I would say is if a county board is being handed a check with conditions, they should politely refuse. Because this is getting into a murky area. We're seeing, you know, sugar daddies pop up in different counties. I've said this before here to you, Mikey. Mm-hmm. The GAA at management level need to legislate on this and stop silliness like this from happening into the future.
Yeah, the final point on this, because I agree, it's a soap opera and it's it's mildly diverting, but we don't want to give it too much attention. The club delegates of Mayo GA have mandated agreed behaviours based on mutual respect, the exclusion of animosity, and the inappropriate use of communication channels such as social media. That's very good, admirable. I'm just wondering where into that do you fit playing pin the tail on the donkey at halftime in McHale Park and money, money, money at halftime in McHale Park. This works both ways, and like, it's just it's a toxic relationship. They're both better off out of it, I say.
Yeah. There's nothing more to add.
No.
On a slightly more serious note, definitely more serious and relating to the field of play, big news in Kilkenny that they've lost young hurler of the year, Adrian Mullen.
Disaster.
For 2020. Yeah. He's tore his cruciate knee ligament in the draw with Clare. I might be corrected here, but I would say that was his first game back, was it? First game for Kilkenny.
Back for Kilkenny.
That's awful unlucky. Yeah. So he's looking at 9 months of rehab and recovery. And we were talking about Kilkenny here with Jackie last week, saying they're kind of, Brian Cody won't be terribly disappointed about losing and drawing some of these games, losing to Wexford because he's building a new team and, you know, like he's blooding some new players. It's all well and good blooding new players, but you're expecting to get your young hurler of the year back for the year. And he would have had big plans for him, and he's a very important player. His speed, the way he can run at defences, he was a real Brian Cody player, wasn't he?
Oh, this is like no different to Richie English as well from a Limerick perspective. Mm. It's a real hammer blow. It's disappointing from a hurling perspective, just even for people that would be, you know, hurling fans and supporters of the game, because I think he's such an exciting talent. He's one of those players that I think we were all really looking forward to see. He was probably heading into kind of a much more mature, the reality for someone like Adrian Mullen is we probably haven't really seen the best of him yet, and that might have come over the next 12 to 24 months. Now look, the one silver lining, and I suppose the cruciate like used to be a career ending, you know. Mm. We all remember Pat with the fame, like it is a much faster recovery time. He is young, and if there is any silver lining for him, you know, he should be back much more quickly than what this injury might
not
have done in
not
the
as
past.
Quickly as his club manager. Now don't try to come back that quickly
also Mikey, it's been a bad weekend for Tyrone as well, Carl McShane getting that bad
like
injury
dislocation, is it
in Tuam, and then the Limerick hurler Richie English as well.
We were actually on Sunday night, we were looking at that injury. I ran it through Piero just to blow it up, just to have a look, and once we did that, the call was made, we definitely do not want to play this out on air, because trust me, it was not pretty, you know, like...
That you're talking about McShane?
McShane.
Yeah. No. You could see in real time from a distance, it doesn't look...
Not pretty
at
all.
It just looks like an awkward fall.
No, really, no. And like, you know, it's, again, you know, of all the players for it to happen to, I'm sure Mickey Hart would have, but you know, it's a pity, again, from a Tyrone perspective and from a football championship perspective, because these are star players and these are the guys that you really want to see in the summer. And unfortunately, we're not going to do that this year.
Speaking of star players and people you want to see in the summer, this is a podcast, as you're probably aware as you listen and not watch us, so there's not much we can do about this. And I'm sure you've all seen it, just to mention the piece of skill that Keane Lynch performed on Sunday. Just, it has to be, it really has to be seen to be believed down in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. To most of us who've ever held a hurl for more than 5 minutes are able to bounce a ball off the ground, flick it into our hand like that. I've never even thought to try flick it up between my legs and catch it
the other side. In tennis they call it a tweener, you know, that shot that they play in tennis where they, you know, like, the brilliant thing about Keane Lynch is, and what's absolutely adorable about watching him play is the chances are he's going to do something different the next time you watch him. Mm. That's the level of excitement that he brings. You know, a couple of weeks ago was the little flick up with the foot and then the hand pass off, and I love the fact that he feels empowered and he's allowed, he's given that license by Kylie. You know, like, Limerick play within a very defined pattern and a very set way, which is extremely exciting to watch. But they do have license as well to express themselves. And I think, you know, look, any opportunity you have to go and watch Keane Lynch play in the flesh, I think you just need to grab it.
But even beyond playing in the flesh, Jim, there's something about the way Keane Lynch plays that he is. There's, I think it was Ken Early used to talk about this, that there's certain footballers who people don't watch them for 90 minutes. They're kind of, they're YouTube real footballers or they're players. You see a clip like Neymar would be one, or Mbappe would be another.
Yeah,
Ronaldinho was maybe the original player. You don't watch them for a whole 90 minutes. You just want to see that one moment of skill.
I think they come under the term of players who just love taking a risk, who will just, and to switch codes, I mean, people were talking about Klopp last night in relation to Trent Alexander-Arnold. Just being able to take a risk, just to, as you say, to do that YouTube moment, which brings me back to, I remember the Offaly goalkeeper, was it John Troy back in the day, down on his own goal line, did a lovely little flick. I mean, that little cameo that some players have always possessed, whether it's going back to the likes of Eddie Kerr or John Fenton for Cork back in the day, you know what I mean? That they as you say, that YouTube moment. Yeah. You know,
there was another one actually, almost as impressive and didn't quite get the same love, I think. It was, which Dublin player scored an absolute peach of a point? Was it Oisin? No, it wasn't Oisin O'Rourke. Somebody down in the corner against Wexford kind of picked up the ball in a little...
Rhian McBride.
Rhian McBride. He picked up the ball with kind of a two-touch motion and then like put it over the bar. Like, I was watching golf the other day and saying golfers these days are operating at another level. I'm sorry, intercounty hurlers now, the skills they possess, the fact they're using shorter hurls with bigger bosses is an element, et cetera, but the things that they're willing to try and the things they're getting away with now, it's just a joy to watch.
Particularly over the weekend, and I was at the Fitzgibbon Cup final last week, or certainly the week before, and it was really instructive to actually see, because it's only a little fraction off the intercounty standard. And when you actually see players up that close and personal, and you actually see the level of close control that they can execute now, and the way they can kill a ball on a hurley, just dead, you know, not needing that second touch, and the speed that's probably what separates the top Liam McCarthy Cup teams. If you look at the Joe McDonagh teams, the Kerrys, Antrims, Wicklows, even the Offaly's, they can do all of the skills. They just can't do it as quickly as teams at Liam McCarthy Cup level. And it's just the speed with which everything is done now. It's a very impressive. It's great to watch.
That said, like, I mean, Cork-Limerick, fantastic game down in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, despite the fact that I think Anthony Daly was giving out on League Sunday, but the fact there were 42 frees awarded in the game. There were 50 frees awarded on Saturday between the Dublin...
But we talked about speed as part of the issue, isn't it? The game moves so fast and the referees...
Fast, but Anthony's point is that you have to let the game flow. I mean, this is all going back to the black card. Or should there be the black card in hurling and all that?
The issue for me, we had a really good debate on Sunday, even before the show went to air, and I know the lads gave their views about the officiating over the weekend, and they thought that maybe there was a little bit too much pernickety kind of whistleblowing going on. I think, on a more philosophical sense, I think the biggest problem hurling has, right, is if you look at the rules of hurling were written about 140 years ago when the game actually started to become organised. Obviously, hurling goes back centuries, but, you know, the game and an organised format was written about 140 years ago. Now, this is flat cap, you know, pull on the ground.
No one picked the ball up.
No one picked the ball up. So the game was played as a ground, you know, 90% of all hurling back then, bar maybe the goalkeeper pucking the ball out, the game was played on the deck for the most part. It wasn't until maybe the 30s and the 40s and Mick Mackey's and these guys were, you know, picking the ball up, lifting it, soloing it, even coming into the Rackerts into the 60s where these types of skills started to come in. Now, the rules are still by and large the same rules, but the game is now an aerial game. The ball is very rarely on the deck anymore. It's all into hand and it's all looking to pick. So the terms of engagement have shifted, and I'm not entirely sure if the rule book has kept pace with that. That's the debate that I think is going on there now. That's the only little issue in terms of the philosophies around why people say, oh, we need to leave it flow. But is that a euphemism then for let's ignore the rule?
Yeah, well, you know, that's always what Brian Cody gets accused of. Right, we're going to switch codes now and we're going to chat to Colm O'Rourke, RT analyst and former Meath forward. And Colm, we might start with Galway. All six forwards scoring from play. 12 points in the first half against Tyrone before any Tyrone men were sent off. Scores from everywhere. Ronan Steed scoring 3 points from midfield. They're really playing to the Páirc Joyce philosophy, but do you think they are the real deal? Are they one of a handful of teams that can actually put it up to Dublin this year?
Yeah, I certainly think so. I think there's only three or four teams anyway in the country at any time, and I suppose Dublin, Kerry, And after that, you probably have Galway to have passed out Tyrone, passed out Mayo, certainly at this stage. So I think they're in pole position to get to Super 8s, get to an All-Ireland semi-final. The big thing about it is they're playing with a little bit of abandon, which they didn't in the last few years. It's as if they've been let off the leash a bit, and Shane Walsh and Damien Comer, Paul Conright, these are all good players, Eamon Brannigan. They're good individual players, and they seem to be really enjoying playing together as well, running up big scores. They were not nearly as defensive as they were in previous years. Maybe that will come back to hurt them a little bit. But Ronan Steed, as you mentioned, in the middle of the field, Steed by name and by nature, yeah. 3 brilliant points last week from play. Kicked a few monsters in the All-Ireland Club Final when I was in at it on St. Patrick's Day. And he seems to be a proper player. And maybe the young Mulcairny at full-back has solved a bit of a problem there as well. And, of course, then you have Johnny Heaney coming up scoring goals. So, good all-round team. And I think the other thing about it is, fair play to Pádraig Joyce. He's made no secret of his ambitions. He set out his stall. He said he didn't go the diplomatic route. He said he wants to win the All-Ireland and he wants to win it now. So I think he's a breath of fresh air in the management ranks as well.
He is, for that bold statement for a start. But also, there's often great hopes when a very stylish footballer, or, you know, I'd say he was of an age where he was probably the first footballer from, you know, kind of outside Wexford who I really took notice of and said, that guy, he plays football the way you're supposed to play football. He was a stylist. And then there's always a fear that, you know, it's certainly in soccer, you see, that certainly doesn't always transfer, that a good player is a good manager or is even able to convey, you know, kind of their philosophy onto the players. But Pádraig Joyce, we all had high hopes, but you feared, you know, a team that had played a certain way under Kevin Walsh for so long. But he seems to have managed to almost like magically transform this team into exactly how you would imagine a team managed by Pádraig Joyce should play football.
Yeah, well, most managers try to get teams to play in their own likeness, I think, is sort of, I think you were trying to make that point anyway. And I think all of us that manage teams who are forwards tend to concentrate a bit more, and I certainly would be the same as well in managing teams, concentrate a bit more on forward play maybe than anything else. And that's what football is about. It's of enjoyment and pleasure, and the gifts that it can bring, and the enjoyment it gives the spectators. And what Pádraig Joyce has done is transformed the team, I think, by mentally readjusting them. And I think the net effect of it is also seen in the paying public, like a huge crowd there last Sunday, because it's not just about winning, but I think it's about the style they play in. And a lot of those sort of supporters who would be in their 40s were there to see Pádraig Joyce and Michael Donlan and Jaff Allen when they played in that brilliant Galway forward line. And he seems to be doing the same thing to this forward line. And I definitely think they're one of the teams that I would like to go and see. And there's not too many at the moment.
And speaking of going to see, Cullum, obviously they're in Navan on Sunday coming. So yeah. I presume you'll be going in for a look. And in complete contrast, your own lads are having a tough time in Division 1.
Yeah, very much so. I went to Killarney last Sunday to see them, and there was a bit of an improvement. But like, 4 losses from 4 games tells its own story. It just shows, I think, that the teams who come up from the second division generally struggle, and that there's a huge gap between the bottom and top of the first division and the top of the second division. And, you know, there's a sort of a rota there with Cavan and Roscommon and Kildare up and down. And it looks as if Meath are following the same pattern. Obviously, I'll be in Castlebar on Saturday night with you, Rory, doing my national service, free gratis to the GEA and to the National Broadcasting Agency. But after national service is concluded, I'll be heading back to Talton. And I'd like to see Galway in the flesh, to see what their sort of movements. When you look at a team on television, oftentimes you don't see what's happening off camera. Yeah. And I often try to put myself behind the goals to look at a forward line and just have a good look at them from that vantage point.
On Mayo then, seeing as you're heading up there, it's probably not quite going as the supporters might have hoped. There's a lot of new players coming in. There's some experimentation. including Lee Keegan at cornerback. And I think all we need to say about that experiment is Lee Keegan was the only member of the Mayo fullback line not to score at the weekend. I don't think he's a natural fullback. I don't think it's going to be where he stays. But, you know, they have a very long history in Division 1. I think they're there since the 80s. They're longer than anybody else. They're the reigning champions. They got Kerry at home this Saturday. Then they're away to Galway, which we were just discussed is about the hardest game going at the moment. So it looks like they may need a result against Tyrone and Castlebar on the last day to preserve that long status as a Division 1 team.
Yeah, that's an awful long question. But I think that it's going to end up with two going down from three. Mead, Mayo, Tyrone. That's the way I would look on it at this time. Conor McShane's injury is a massive blow to Tyrone. But Mayo are struggling. But the one thing about James Horan is he obviously has decided he's going to persist with the players that he has on, and Young Mullen and Pádraig O'Hara and players like this. James Durkin is going to be given a starting berth, and Fergal Boland, and he's going to either sink or swim with those fellas in the league. And I suppose he realises that there is no future without change, and that there might be short-term pain and hopefully long-term gain in it. But I watched Mayo and Navan against Meath. I thought they were poor, even though they won the game. I thought they were gone back an awful lot. Obviously, they've lost a lot of experienced players, but I would see them going down. But it's not the end of the world to go down to the second division anyway.
And when you, especially when you're James Horan and you've an awful lot of credit in the bank with the Mayo supporters and with the Mayo County Board.
He hasn't much credit with the sponsor going by Twitter last weekend.
Colm, James here, one team who isn't likely to go down from the top tier is Donegal, but they seem to have a problem at the moment in closing out games. I think the defeat to Dublin on Saturday was the third game this spring that they definitely had the winning of, but they couldn't seal the deal.
Yes, and I saw the record and put up on the Sunday game on Sunday night about the number of big games that they've lost over the last couple of years. And certainly, but the other thing about it is, like, they have young players like Kieran Thompson and Michael Lang and Jamie Brennan. Mm. They're really, to me, they're top class players. Owen Bond Gallagher. If they got Gillespie back, he would be a massive help to their back line, and they are leaking scores. I still see them certainly top four, top six in the country, but like Ryan McHugh and Michael Murphy can only pull so much weight, and they need a bit of help.
Dublin's slow starts continue, Colm. Is this hope for the rest of us to cling to, or just a sign of a team who've had a short pre-season and they're coming off the back of five All-Irelands in a row and probably know that they can coast a little?
No, there's no hope for anybody else. You might as well give up the ghost now. This is only half a Dublin team. Unfit and a whole load of new players, but the likes of Sean Bugler and Aaron Byrne coming in and Liam Flatman and all these new fellas that are thrown in there. Wait till Jack McCaffrey comes back, and maybe Philly McMahon, Keane O'Sullivan, Con O'Callaghan missing from the forward line. Paul Mannion looks a bit strong, which is a nice way of saying he's unfit looking. Mm-hmm. And wait till they all get going again. I think Dublin are just going to be, they seem to be as hungry as ever. And they're just incredible in the way that they won't give up on any game. Like, was it 10 down against Monaghan, 5 or 6 down against Donegal? I really admire the fact that they just get the bit between their teeth when they're struggling and push on. That's a marvellous attitude. You can't put that in a team. That comes from each individual.
As a manager yourself, what then, how would you explain away the slow starts? Because not that, as you said, they're still winning games, they're still clawing back to draws, but it's a trend that wasn't there under Jim Gavin.
No, I'd say that's only a temporary phase. I'd say that they go out sort of not too bothered, and then it's only when the heat turns up that they start getting going. I would say that will be of no relevance later in the year. Yeah,
just one thing before, I know, Mike, you might want to get on to Congress eventually there, Colm, but just in relation, because I know Kildare would be a team that you would be familiar with, obviously being Leinster neighbours and rivals down through the years. They have had, you know, under new management, as we know, and have had a fairly stop-start opening couple of games in the league. Under pressure?
Very much so. And I thought Jack O'Connor would come in then, give him a big lift. Daniel Flynn coming back to the team. And over the last few years, I thought Kildare had a lot of very good individual players, like Kevin Feely in the middle of the field, another very, very good player. But I was in Armagh the night they played in that hurricane up there. And at half time, you would think that Kildare were in a great position. They were going to be playing against a very strong wind, or 6 or 7 points behind. It shouldn't have been a problem. And yet they were beaten double scores. I thought they were limp, and it was a throwback to old Kildare where they sort of laid down. And if you contrast, on the same night in Croke Park, Dublin played Monaghan and were 10 down at one time. And yet you knew this isn't over. But with Kildare, halfway through the second half, you knew it was over. There was no chance of a comeback from them. And that's a big, big issue for them. Now, they were a little better against Roscommon last week. Were beaten. I thought they were one of the teams that would have gone up. Now, their struggle is to ensure that they stay up, because the penalty for going down to the third division is so severe now that you could lose out in the race for Sam. But I'm very disappointed with them. I thought there was more, should be more to them, but there doesn't seem to be.
We might move on to the main event of the weekend, in some people's eyes at least, is Croke Park on Friday evening and on Saturday. Congress, this question isn't aimed at you in particular, Colin, before you take offence, but I'm wondering, is Congress something you care about more as you get older?
Yeah. the simple answer to that is no. I have avoided it like that plague in China, and I will continue to do so. But at the same time, it's democracy at work, even though I would prefer a benign dictatorship to run the GEA. I think it would work much better. But those people who give long hours, I suppose they deserve their days away.
The one thing to say about it, though, Colm, that I have often found with it, like, it is the decision-making body, and it is where the decisions, big decisions, get made, and no different. No, and certainly that's the case with one particular one that you wrote eloquently about over the weekend in the Sunday Independent. But people very often look at Congress, with a certain level of disdain, and they don't really, tune in. Then a decision is made, and then a couple of months later, who made that decision? Well, this happened. And I think there is that element that, this is where all the decisions are made. People don't tune into it. Then there's a little bit of kind of whinging after the fact. I'm not sure if, I don't know how you feel about that.
That's true. And there's a disconnect there between players in particular and, say, decision-making body. But I suppose the GPA were supposed to be that conduit and that voice for them through Congress. It doesn't seem to be working very well, and I'm not going to hammer the GPA again.
I
think I've put the boot in on them and cut them off at the knees on too many occasions, so I'm going to give them a free ride on this one. But I think more and more of the important decisions of Congress are coming through committees that have been set up, like this fixture review thing.
Yeah.
So a lot of the really big decisions are being made by committees, and in fairness, those decisions are then circulated to counties well in advance. Everybody has a chance to debate them, so, and right back to clubs, so people shouldn't complain too much about it.
Yeah, Colm, I think actually some of the big decisions in recent years haven't been made at Congress at the end of February, but tend to be made in special congresses in autumn, like the introduction of the backdoor in hurling, and last autumn then you had the tier two in football. So some of the bigger decisions are coming at other times of the year, which makes you think, is Congress being diluted somewhat?
Well, it would be a good thing, probably would. Like, if you were looking on the GEA as a sort of a management structure, like the obvious thing to do would be set up an 8 or a 10-man board who would come up with policies and big decisions rather than allowing it go through this whole system. But I suppose we're laboured. It has been reduced, hasn't it, in the last few years anyway. The numbers attending are smaller.
I can remember being at a Congress in 1989. I think it started on a Monday and it ended on the following Tuesday week.
Does the column, I'm wondering, does the identity of the GA president matter? Is it a figurehead? Do we put too much stock in it? Or does anybody put any stock in it, in your opinion?
Well, I think it is important because he has been a leader for change. In fairness, like John Horne has brought in a lot of different committees and come up with different initiatives. You mightn't agree with them, and I didn't agree with some of them and or a lot of them. But I think the driving force for change generally comes from a president who takes on a few agendas. And like John Horne has taken on the fixtures, tried to do something about it. A lot of people don't agree with what they have come up with. I certainly would think it's not nearly radical enough, but at the same time, at least he's pushed for change, and if you change in the GAA are often by incremental steps, so maybe somebody will come up. Like, I was on the original body that came up with the backdoor system, and like that's whatever, 20 years ago. It's need time now to move on from that.
One motion, motion 36, Colm, which I think, again, will probably not grab too many headlines, but I think is quite important and ties in with what you said about John Horne, is the setting up of a national fixtures task force. So this, now this will be a body that will have, like, you're into Elliot Ness type of, you know, like they will have a fairly wide ranging powers to monitor and keep an eye on fixtures making in all of the counties. Your fixtures programs now for the individual county boards will have to be submitted in January, and there will be serious penalties, which will include, and this is in black and white, penalty for non-compliance, loss of championship expenses and or grants, or disqualification from the inter-county championship concerned. So that's quite that would give this particular committee a fair bit of power now in terms of being able to shake a stick if things aren't being run in accordance with what they've set out at the beginning of the year.
It's badly needed too, because one of the major problems with GAA is that policies at central level are not carried out by county boards, who continue to break things like training bans and stuff like that. So you need an Elliot Ness, because there's a load of Al Capones running wild at county board level. And I don't think, they might get them on tax evasion as well. So, but it is a battle, and that needs to be carried out properly. But until such time as county boards are willing to abide by central diktats, like the GAA is going nowhere.
Yeah, the one motion I know that has you rather exercised relates to the second level, the colleges competitions, and how they are hoping to get them run off. Football finished by the fifth Sunday of the year, I believe, and the hurling done by St. Patrick's Day. This has all been triggered by the under 20 being moved back to the spring, whereas bumping up against the Fitzgibbon and the Sigerson, and there seems to be an awful rush to get our young people's games finished before the clocks have even changed.
I can't understand this. To me, this under-20 competition is more trouble than it's worth. Why it had to be moved back into February, God only knows. I wish somebody would tell me who came up with that decision or what the logic was.
It comes back to the costs again, because the competition was run in August. Teams were beginning preparations in January, Cullum, and then the cost, that the receipts that were being submitted into county boards ended up being exorbitant. So as a means of clamping down on that, they moved the competition to earlier in the year, so it would be run off quicker, and then as a result, the expenses would be far less.
Yeah, well, it has created far more problems anyway than it solved. At the time when I was on a committee, we proposed that the minor and under 21 would be banded together as an under 19 competition, and that nobody at under 19 would be allowed to play senior football until they team were out of the championship. I thought it was an eminently sensible idea. But like this under 20 competition now is hitting schools, because schools, the age went up to under 19. Mm. So I thought that when the minor was done away with at 18, it solved all my problems with leave and certs. Instead of that, now we end up with a load of level lads playing senior football for the school who are on the under 17 panel, the new minor, and now the older lads are on the under 20 panel and are being looked to go training with that team. And then to make it worse, they brought in a rule that if you play senior, then you can't play under 20. Like, That's an arsewise rule, if you pardon the French. Yeah. It should be the other way around. If a fella's playing under 20, he should be playing under 20 until his team are out of the under 20 championship and then go with the senior team. Not the other way around. Player welfare would dictate that a player should stick with his underage team until such time as it's out. But like, why it had to be jammed in there, I think it would have been better off to abandon that competition altogether.
And Derek McGrath was on with us on Sunday night, who's also of, similar to yourself, Colin, working in education, teacher below in De La Salle in Waterford, and he was very exercised by this motion as well, because he feels that the Hearty Cup and the excitement that it creates in the school, not everybody in the school at that playing at post-primary level will be good enough to play county football, at even at minor or under 21. It creates a level of excitement within the school and the build up, you know, and it sustains lads and it keeps them interested in Gaelic games right up. And it's he was making the point that even from, we'll say, the sort of the mental health aspect and giving lads who might be under pressure in terms of exams that little outlet where they can go and train or play games, and that it would continue right up till they're leaving cert, that it was actually a healthy thing as well for young boys and girls to have, you know?
Absolutely, and it's proven by all studies that people who are involved in vigorous exercise and physical activity are healthier and do better in exams. So, like, it's not as if one penalises the other. In fact, we're out of the championship here now in the senior, and God forbid, we actually have to do a bit of school now. We don't have the diversion of playing football every day, and it's dreadful altogether around the place. So it's sort of behaving as a normal school now at the moment. But lads come into school when they're in the championship. They chat to each other. There's excitement. We're able to bring supporters. It creates a sense of identity. And if you have this whole thing having to be finished in January, the reality is that the provincial championships are shoved back into December. In fact, a lot of the schools will probably be finished with their football activity in November. Now, that doesn't make any sense to me to be putting that there. This is elitism, as I was writing, because what you're doing is putting all competitions into pre-Christmas in order to suit an under-20 competition, which is, I think, a Mickey Mouse job.
Right. Well, actually, Colm, that under-20, I think, is the plan for the GAA to have the under-20 All-Ireland semis on St. Patrick's Day,
yes,
to make Patrick's Day the under-20s day, as was with the Railway Cup, as was with the club finals, you know, so...
Yeah. Well, that's the promotion, but good luck with that, because I think if you're opening up Croke Park for All-Ireland under-20 semi-finals, if they get 10,000 at the two semi-finals,
doing well.
I'd say doing very, very well. So I don't see it as a runner for packing out Croke Park or anything like that. But like the schools aspect of it is worrying, like that you're going to be pushing all of this football. And, of course, it's also into the very worst time of the year as well, weather-wise. So it's not good for promotion of the game.
Speaking of that, we're going to let you back to hunkering down to the snow there, and you can crack open the books and do some of that awful study. Thanks very much, Colin.
Thanks, Colin.
You're very welcome.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, we'll move back to hurling now, and I'm delighted to be joined by Tipperary forward John Bubbles O'Dwyer, speaking at the announcement of Allianz's 5-year extension of its sponsorship of the Allianz Football and Hurling Leagues. Their 33-year association makes them one of the GAA's longest-standing supporters. How are you doing today, John?
Not too bad.
Sorry, John or Bubbles? I don't usually call someone by their nickname if I don't know them, but it seems the whole country calls you Bubbles, so I'm not sure.
Whichever, no, it doesn't really
matter. Fair enough. Well, sure, maybe I'll mix it up. I suppose the first question, the logical one would be, is how's your head?
Oh, yeah, fine, yeah. It was more so precaution than anything, really. The doctors there, they just had to go through a lot of procedures there just to make sure that everything was okay. And I was fine, no concussion and no major. Soreness or anything like that, so I was fine a couple of days later.
Yeah, what do you remember the incident? Just, I suppose, for listeners, you came on as a sub late on against Cork down in Parky Cueve, and you went up for a high ball with Bill Cooper, and you were kind of stretched out then for a couple of minutes before you were replaced. And after the match, Liam Sheedy said you were maybe a small bit concussed. Do you have much memory of the incident?
I remember everything. Yeah, that's basically it. Just went up for a ball and just ended up coming down awkwardly on my neck, really. So our doctor, Brendan Murphy, was there, and then the Cork's medical team was there as well. So it was just mainly precaution than anything else. I went through all the concussion protocols and stuff like that, so I actually had no concussion. So it was just precautionary, just just a sore back and neck and ribs for a week, and that's it.
Okay, yeah. What do you make of how the GAA deals with concussion? Because obviously it's very much in the news. It always seems to be in the news with rugby. In soccer yesterday, we saw, you know, children at training are no longer going to be allowed to head football, kind of to try and cut down on head injuries. I know, I think there's an Offaly motion at Congress this year to treat head injuries the same as blood injuries. If you receive any kind of a head injury, you should be taken off and, you know, assessed by the doctors. Given the fact that you recently went through an incident, do you think the GAA's protocols are robust enough? Did you feel safe and well looked after?
Well, yeah. Well, I can't speak from other teams' experience,
yeah.
but from our team experience, our doctor Brendan, he's very vigilant in what he does. He makes us all very aware of that if someone gets a head injury and he comes onto the field, and if he feels that we're incapable, or if we're not fully up to the required level, he says that it's his decision and not a player's decision or a management decision to pull you out of there. So he does that straight away.
All right. From
our perspective, I think from Tipperary anyway, I think Brendan has that whole situation in order.
All right. Well, that must be very reassuring for you, that, you know, because it's not usually anybody trying to do anything wrong, but sometimes the will to win, you know, your desire to play, sometimes a manager or a player might overlook, you know, the health aspect of things. But it's good to know that you have a strong voice on the sideline who'll just pull you out regardless.
Yeah, and when matters like that do happen, like, you know, and the less that do happen, the better. But if that does happen, it automatically comes into the doctor's hand, and especially for our team, and he makes the decision, and it doesn't actually come into question with Liam. Liam has no exact say in the matter, to be honest.
Yeah, so you're fit and firing and ready to go this weekend against Watford.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah, just missed last weekend there. Just had to get something, just a small little thing done on my ankle there. So yeah, back training now and ready to go if I'm picked, hopefully.
Yeah. So you've been a spectator for a couple of weeks, given weather and ankles and stuff like that. I'm wondering, what have you made of the hurling? I don't know if you saw League Sunday. There's a lot of talk at this time of year about the state of the game, you know, number of frees, number of stoppages, you know, there's the possibility of the sin bin being brought in at Congress. I'm wondering, you know, you've watched a couple of games from the sidelines or from the couch. What have you made of these kind of discussions?
Overall, it hasn't been a bad league. I think it's been good, and one thing you can take for it, it's been very competitive as well. There's been a lot of standout matches and stuff like that. But so looking into the stand and just listening to a few things there from the weekend and comments and stuff about referees and frees and stuff like this, I think you have to take into consideration the weather conditions and the time of the year it is, and also the fitness and say touch on the players. Like, it's not going to be up to scratch, and it's not going to be as good as what it is in the summer. So I think that comes into consideration. I think there was a lot of conversations this time last year as well about the amount of frees and stuff. But then when it came to championship, there was no questions about it. So I think once the championship comes around, I think all this stuff will quieten down again.
Yeah, there's two games, isn't there? There's spring hurling and then there's championship hurling, and they're not always refereed the same.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, refs kind of have to do what they see in front of them, but also they need to take maybe the safety of the players into consideration with regard to underfoot conditions and stuff like this. Like, you know, so I think there needs to be a small bit of leniency towards the refs and stuff like this, but also a bit of common sense then as well.
Yeah, 100%. And what about the sin bin then? There's, if you come out in favour of it, I think you'll be the first inter-county hurler to do so. Would I be fair to assume that you wouldn't be in favour of it either?
No, I wouldn't be in favour. No, I think this thing of trying to bring sin bins in and black cards in into hurling and stuff like this is just for people just to get their name out there, I think, or something to be seen, to be making a rule and stuff like this. But I don't, like, hurling is one of the most entertainment games in the world, and one of the most watched sports in the world as well. Like, you know, for such a small country and such big attendances for games and stuff, like, why change something that isn't broke or isn't working? I think the people that are trying to do this need to take into consideration the views of players and not just what they want to do from a top brass kind of an issue. So If they bring players into consideration and let players discuss it and actually have an insight into it, I think it will be more beneficial. But just going in, bringing in a sin bin or a black card, I think it's pure nonsense, to be honest.
Yeah, but you know, you're a skillful scoring forward, man who likes to run a goal when he gets a chance. You've surely in your time been dragged down, rugby tackled, tripped, you know, intentionally. Are you not exactly the kind of person they're looking to protect here?
Well, yeah, but like the cynicism hasn't come into this game in the last 2 or 3 years. It's been there since 1884. Like. You know what I mean? It hasn't just come about here in the last 3 or 4 years. It's always been there. It's just been talked about now. But the way I would see it is, why not talk about the good aspects of the game and things that are done well? And like at the end of the day, if someone was running through on top of our defenders and my fullback didn't do that, you'd be questioned. So I think we just need to promote the game in a more positive way instead of talking about cynicism and stuff like this.
Okay, so you're perfectly happy with the rules as they are. You don't think cynicism needs to be tackled in any way. You think it's a part of the game, and a free in is punishment enough.
Yeah, it's part of the game, and like if someone's running through and you're being brought down a yellow card or whatever, like cynicism is part of it. And if you're running through on goal, or if I was running through on goal and someone didn't pull me down, your manager would be livid with you. You know, you can prevent a goal at all costs, and if that means that you pick up a yellow card, that's fair enough. But to bring in this yellow or this black card or sin bin, I think there's no need for it, and there isn't a place for it in any GAA, never mind hurling.
Okay. John, I'll let you go now. Thanks very much for taking the call, and I'm sure hopefully we'll chat to you again during the summer.
No problem. Thanks very much.
See you now. Bye.
Thank you. All right, bye.
Okay, that's it for this week's episode. Obviously, you can keep across all your GAA news during the week and at the weekend on the RTE website and RTE News Now. The Sunday and Saturday sport on RTE Radio 1 will have commentaries and updates from around the country. And Rory, where are you this week?
TV-wise, yeah, we have a live game Saturday night, one to really look forward to. I'm sure Mr. O'Leary might be there as well. Maybe making a trip from Prague back to Castlebar. But yeah, so it's Kerry heading to Castlebar, take on Mayo, and that's a 7:15 throw in as opposed to 7 o'clock. We're on the air at 6:30, so that's certainly something to look forward to on Saturday night. And then we're back on Sunday with highlights, another 2-hour show, hurling and football.
Jim, you have a weekend off after a busy weekend last weekend, so you enjoy that now.
Will do, yeah, but I'll be keeping abreast of the situation with the leagues. Obviously, round 4 going into round 5, I suppose it's like the round 3 in golf, it's moving day, and I think the picture could be a bit clearer. I suspect Cork footballers will win again, Limerick footballers will win again, Division 2. Can the lazy Calvin keep going and keep winning? We'll just have to wait and see.
Thank you very much, Jim.
Right.
And we will chat to you again next week. Thank you very much.